parametric methods includes the ability to look at data that's simply ranked, and it's a data that is got an order to it, but there's no meaning between the values of the ranking. So the difference between 1 and 2 could be milliseconds, or it could be an hour, and it's just ranked the first one across the finish line and the second one, and it doesn't contain the information about what's the distance between those rankings. It's just a rank order. And we run into this data all kinds of different places, and sometimes we want to make comparisons or make judgments about that data. So nonparametric methods allow us to do that. So we'll look at a few examples. Now, it's for rank data, it's really the only way that I know of to make these comparisons. So in that regard, it's powerful. But more importantly, it's useful. So if we're going to make comparisons of data that really doesn't have a meaningful distribution associated with it, at least that not that I'm aware of, then these are a couple of methods. Now, it's also part of getting introduced to nonparametric techniques. Now, they pull from coefficients and ratios of data and create values that we can interpret that way, or they create something similar to a hypothesis test or a hypothesis test. So if the data is uniformly distributed but evenly distributed, we should say, it should follow a uniform distribution. And for, say, some kind of data or comparisons or distances between or something like that. And then we compare it to what happens if it's not really from that distribution, much like a hypothesis test. So in this section, we'll take a look at 3 different tests, and they use slightly different approaches for doing it. Now, more importantly is that you should work out each of these sets of examples and questions related to these nonparametrics, so that Not necessarily so that you can quickly do the calculation on the exam. Many of these techniques are pretty tedious and are unlikely to be a question in and of themselves. But being familiar with the different techniques and what they're capable of doing and not doing does take some practice in thinking through and looking at different kinds of data sets. So that's what I recommend you do. So let's take a look at the first one, Kendall's coefficient of concordance. It's a wonderful name, but it's really looking at if I have rank data, rank ordering of say preferences in this example, or just the rank order of finishers in different races, and I want to find out if there's a consistency to them, if they're the same. So sometimes I'm judging or evaluating the judges, I should say, or I'm looking at people as they finish the race. Is somebody getting better and is somebody getting worse beyond just enough that it's a significant difference? And so this is a way to evaluate things like that. So let's take a look at 3 people ranked 10 pieces of music. The music was played, they were allowed to select which was their favorite, and they gave it a 1, and which was their least favorite and gave it a 10. And the idea is, are they consistent? So if one person's ranking music that I like, are these other 2 people ranking music in a similar way that they could substitute for my preferred reviewer, for example? And you can see some of the data is very consistent and some of it's not. So reviewer A had the first song they liked the most, but B and C put it below the midpoint, the 6 and 7. When other times, there was one song in the list that they all didn't like very much. It was 10, 9, 10 is their rankings. But there's others that are fairly inconsistent. And so are the 3 of them consistent enough, or is there a significant difference as one of them significantly different from the others, at least one? And so I put the index on it, 1 through 10, which is just a label for the 10 pieces of music we played, and then take the sum of the values going across. So 1 plus 7 plus 6 gives me the 14, 5 plus 6 plus 4 gives me the 15, and so on. And so we're going to use this R index, our sum of values here in the next step. And right away, we're going to calculate where we're aiming for is something like a standard deviation. It doesn't have the divide by square root of n term in there, square root of divide by n minus 1. It has just the sum of deviations term. But we need the mean value. And in this case, if it's just the hypothetical mean for the rankings, it's the number of evaluators and the number of items being ranked. And so we get a value in this particular case with 3 people and 10 items, we get a value of 16.5. So that's the R bar. And then we take the R sub 1, which I think was 14, minus the 16.5 and square it, and then so on, and then add all those up. And so we get a value of 320.5. Now we're going to use this S value in the W coefficient. Not really sure where the W comes from. Maybe it was Kendall's favorite letter or something. But anyway, W in this case provides us a coefficient. And coefficients usually go from minus 1 to 1 or from 0 to 1. In this case, it goes from 0 to 1, where 12 times that's the square deviations divided by m squared n cubed minus n, we get a value that turns out to be, if it's 0, there is no agreement among the 3 rankings. And if it's 1, they're all identical. And so it's a pretty convenient coefficient. The closer we are to 1, the more agreement among the reviewers or in those rank series. And if it's 0 or close to 0, then there's little correlation or little consistency is probably the appropriate term. Now, in this particular case, we got a 0.43. It's below 0.5, but is it significant or not? Is there a statistical relevance to this amount of relationship between the reviewers? Now, a lower value tends to be less significant, so I doubt it. But if we needed to do the calculation, we can do so. And so we use the basic approach of a hypothesis test. So we're going to calculate a test statistic. So what should it be if there is a correlation? So we're looking at the right tail of a chi-squared distribution, and we're saying that if it's if our test statistic from the data is large enough to be above the critical value of, we'll say, some confidence, then we would say there is some concordance or some agreement, a statistically relevant agreement among the reviewers. If it's less than that, then we don't have evidence to say that they're consistent. So we would say they're not consistent, or we have no evidence that they are consistent. So in this case, we calculate out a chi-squared value. It's a ratio, and we get 11.65. Well, we need something to compare that to, and it's called a critical value. And so we, in this case, the appropriate chi-squared is using we're using a 90% confidence, so the alpha value is 0.1. It's a single tail distribution, so it's just the upper tail. And we're using a degrees of freedom of n minus 1, and in this case is 9. And so if you look that up in the tables, under 0.1, with degrees of freedom of 9, we get about 14.6, 14.7. And by the way, you should be familiar with the tables, and this is just one example. We'll spend more time looking at using these tables and reading values from them in a future lesson. But so now we've got a test statistic of 11.65, which is less than our critical value. So at a 90% confidence, the data suggests that the 3 reviewers are not consistent. They're not aligned in their rank ordering of these songs. They don't have similar tastes, would be another way of saying it. So in this case, the null hypothesis really is that they're all the same, and the alternate hypothesis is that there's some the null hypothesis is there they're all different. There are three different reviewers, said that backwards. And if I have a high enough test statistic, higher than the critical value, then I have evidence that they are the same. They are aligned correctly. That's what we're looking for. I'm sorry. So in this particular case, we don't have evidence to show that they are aligned, that they're not consistent. So we're going to conclude that they're not similar, and they do not have similar tastes in the music. So it's one way to use this particular non-parametric. But find your own data set or a circumstance where you have ranked data and run through the calculations and see what kind of results you get and how accurate it can be for you. Now, I've got two or three more, and we'll just go through them very quickly without working the examples in this lesson, but we'll add them separately. The Spearman rank correlation coefficient provides another coefficient value, this time between minus 1 and 1, where it's looking for either a negative correlation, much like a regression coefficient, correlation coefficient. If they're one step in one rating is equivalent to a negative step in the other one, so they're completely opposite, basically. Or are they exactly the same, which this value would be 1. So in this case, it's, say, ratings on movies, and I'm looking for another reviewer that has a consistent view of somebody else that I like. And so we get a collection of, say, 10 or 20 movie ratings and get those values and then rank order them. And then it gives us an ability then to calculate these values. And I believe the D in the Spearman rank coefficient is the difference between the two values. So in some regards, it's very similar to the Kendall's correlation or coefficient. It's just a slightly different calculation and approach, and it works for data that's, say, not already rank ordered, but it's, say, ratings. So it might be a 3-star rating, 4-star rating, 5-star rating, things like that. And then we would put them in order, compare the two reviewers' ratings on movies and do those comparisons. So if one ranked it a 4 and the other a 3, we'd have a difference, and so on down the list. And again, it works for data that really doesn't have a distribution or has an unknown distribution or one where it really doesn't make sense to force it into, say, a binomial distribution, for example. So that's Spearman rank coefficient. Another one is uses more of an analysis of variance type approach, and it's looking at the basic different groups or different treatments, and the data again has to be suitable for ranking. So it may not be in rank order already, but it may have some ordinal type data that allows us to do a ranking. And what we're comparing, though, is the ranking values, not the actual data. So we take, say, movie ratings, for example, from three or more different reviewers, or we take three sets of material properties that we're measuring, and it's just a rank ordering type of, it's data that's suitable for rank ordering. So it might be pleasantness of the color, for example, or the perceived quietness or pleasantness of a sound of a motor, for example. Those things we may be using judges for to make comparisons, and they may only rank order it or put it on an artificial, say, 1 to 10 scale or 1 to 5 scale or something like that. And then it allows us then to compare the rankings, and it uses a basic approach that we're going to talk about in future lessons between hypothesis tests and analysis of variance. So didn't really add a lot of value on that one. I'll have to add some more notes for this particular test. Now, I should mention that I'm going to add a table that lists a good number of these non-parametrics and just a brief description of it, plus the critical formulas for it. And so you'll have a table that you can use to review what you need to know for each of these non-parametrics. Now, I do recommend you work out the examples and work out your own data sets with each of these methods to get familiar with the calculations and the types of data that they deal with. You can find worked examples for further study and a bit more explanation in detail at the CRE Prep site. In the next section, we'll take a look at just a couple more non-parametric methods. And as I've mentioned, we're just scratching the surface with how many possibilities are out there. But we'll take a look at some that relate to reliability and to doing comparisons.